Good morning and welcome to JFK Spotlight on Health. It's brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health, JFK University Medical Center. Keep getting better. I'm Joel Katz, and joining me this week is Dr. Kostantinos Poulikidis, who is the assistant professor in the Department of Surgery at Hackensack Meridian School of Medicine and thoracic surgeon at Hackensack Meridian Health Central Region. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking the time to speak today. I want to cover a lot of things today. We'll be covering, among other things, innovations in thoracic surgery. So I believe that you are one of only two programs in New Jersey that use a specific robotic system. That's so?
That is correct.
Could you tell us about that?
Absolutely. When it comes to diagnosing lung cancer, a lot of times we find on CAT scans these small lesions that, you know, all we have are really pictures on a scan. We don't really know what they are. We're obviously thinking of the worst case scenario. We want to know if it's a cancer. And there's different ways of trying to get biopsies beforehand to make a educational decision with the patient on what we're going to do about it. One way that that's currently done nationally in most institutions is using the CAT scanner. They were able to take a needle from outside the body, the radiologists were able to identify exactly where that lesion is, get the needle into the lesion, and get a piece of tissue. There's obviously risks associated with that and pain for the patient. And one of the new systems that have been developed, which, as you mentioned, we are only one of two programs in the state of New Jersey that have this system, is the new robotic navigational bronchoscopy.
Mm-hmm.
So bronchoscopy in itself, just to simplify, is putting a camera down into the airway while a patient is asleep. We can look at the inside of the airway. And now using the robot, this allows a robot that I control, I can guide it down into the airway to the exact location of this lesion based on the CAT scan the patient had done mm-hmm. days before or even the day of. I can get to that exact lesion, park the bronchoscope, the camera, at that location, and just do multiple biopsies. This comes with significantly less risk for the patient. It comes with a better yield, meaning higher chance of me actually getting a good specimen to get an answer for what this lesion is. And even most importantly for patients, essentially no pain at all.
So how come you're only one of two? I mean, can you answer that question? Like, why is there only two in New Jersey using this when it seems to be such a great thing?
So it's a brand new system.
Okay.
It has only been out a few years, and it's also quite expensive. Me and my partner here at the central region here in Hackensack, mainly out of JFK, we specialize specifically in robotic surgery, minimally invasive surgery, this is just the next step in the treatment of these lung cancers.
Okay, so how does it get to the point? How does a person get to you? Obviously, people aren't just randomly walking off the streets to get these tests done and so forth. How does it get to you where it gets to the point where you're actually using this robotic surgery system?
So that's a great question. So the patients that are at most risk for lung cancer that have these lesions are smokers. There are a lot of people that are smokers out there, and they don't know, you know, what do I do to figure out if I have one of these lesions? And there are guidelines in the United States for lung cancer screening that patients should be aware of, that they can talk to their primary care. They've identified these higher risk patients as being patients between the ages of 50 and 80. Who have a 20-pack-year smoking history. And what I mean by pack-year smoking history, if you smoke one pack a day for 1 year, that's a one-pack year. If you smoke half a pack a day, that's a half-pack year. So 20-pack years, if you're smoking a one-pack a day for 20 years, you meet one of the criteria. And the third is if you are a current smoker or have quit within the last 15 years. So if you meet one of those three criteria, I encourage patients to talk to their primary care physician to schedule a low-dose CAT scan.
Now, did you say 20 pack? I understand what you mean. One pack a day for a year is one pack a year. So 20 pack years, that's the minimum or the maximum?
That is the minimum.
Okay,
if you've only been smoking one pack a day for 10 years, you don't meet the criteria.
You don't meet the criteria.
Risk is lower. So they don't see much benefit in getting that lung cancer screening. But once you surpass the 20 pack years, that's when you meet one of the criteria.
It seems like a pack a day for 10 years is a lot, or even 5 years.
It is. It is. And I encourage those patients to quit smoking before
course,
they reach the point that they're statistically much higher at developing a lung cancer.
Do we know why? And I think this is something, I think this is the main reason, not that I know what I'm talking about, but let me just throw this out there. The main reason people keep smoking is because so many people will smoke their whole lives and never get lung cancer. Do we know why some people do and some people don't? Like, someone could smoke, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I could smoke for 6 months and get lung cancer from that, and then someone could smoke for 50 years and not. How does that happen?
So that's a difficult question to answer,
but I'll do my best.
So lung cancer does not only happen in smokers. There are different types of lung cancer. The most common is going to be in smokers. So by creating a lung cancer screening, we're able to capture the majority of patients with lung cancer. Unfortunately, there are people that, you know, avoid smoking, advocate for family members to stop smoking, but they themselves can develop a lung cancer. And that's just genetics. And like you said, there's some people who may only have a 20-pack year smoking history and don't have any and have a lesion in their lungs, but then I'll have a patient with, you know, 2 packs a day for 50 years with a 100-pack year smoking history, and they have nothing. They're just undergoing their lung cancer screening and nothing is being identified. I don't have an answer for why that is one person to another, but, you know, I would always encourage patients to, you know, not compare themselves to what others have and to just, you know, look out for their own health. And, you know, there are a lot of programs and things out there for people to help them with quitting smoking. I understand it's a very difficult thing, and I'm here to support any patient that I see and encourage them, but, you know, it's in their hands.
Do you find that there's a certain way of quitting that seems to work better than others?
There's the gum, there's the patch, there's medications we can give. Cold turkey is probably the lowest chance of success. There's different programs where you can meet and talk to one of our navigators. It's all really different and based on people's personalities, what works best for them.
I had a fellow student in high school once. We were doing presentations, and one of the presentations he was doing on was how to quit smoking. And I guess he misunderstood. You just mentioned, you know, quitting cold turkey. Well, I guess he misunderstood what that meant and his presentation. Some people quit by eating cold turkey.
Yeah. I would love for that to be a solution.
Yeah,
a lot of people would be able to quit.
So what about with vaping? A lot of people think that is not as harmful. Is it just as harmful? Is your experience that it's more harmful?
My experience is that it's just as harmful.
Okay.
Those patients a lot of the people that I see that are vaping have tried quitting smoking, and they'll tell me, oh, I've quit smoking, I just vape now. To them, I say, you're just as at risk as you were before. And I encourage them to quit the same way I encourage them to quit their smoking.
Yeah, it's crazy how we have to re-educate people about something that they already know about smoking, and then vaping is the same, and now everyone thinks it's okay, and then you have to re-educate them to let them know it's not okay.
I think it's just a lack of information.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people associate the smoke that's burning from the cigarette, but the vaping is just as risky.
Well, let's talk about that smoke. I'm going to have to, you know, compare it to the vaping. There are people who have lived with smokers and end up with just as bad a case, I guess you'd say, as the smoker themselves, true?
Absolutely. Secondhand smoking does increase your risk of developing a lung cancer.
Okay, so we know all about that. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about the signs, the symptoms of lung cancer. Are there any, before a test, you haven't had any tests, is there anything that would say, oh, wait a second, I should get this checked out, and it is a sign of or a symptom of lung cancer?
So that's a very good question that I think the patients really need to be educated on. The majority of patients that have a lung cancer will be completely asymptomatic. They will have no signs. They will feel their usual healthy selves. But a lot of times, these patients that we see in the office will have been seeing their primary care. They'd had this bad pneumonia or this really bad cough for a few weeks. They'll get treated with antibiotics. It doesn't go away. They'll try antibiotics again. That's another very common sign. If you keep getting frequent lung infections or a lung infection that's just not getting better with antibiotics. And then sometimes if it's, you know, these lesions, these lung cancers, they can happen in any part of your lung. They can happen all the way on the mm-hmm. periphery, the very outside part of your lung, but it can also be very central towards the middle. If it's near enough to an airway, if you start coughing up some blood, that could be a sign as well. These are all things that I would encourage you to see your primary care, consider x-rays as a start. But like I said, most importantly, those asymptomatic patients, that's where the lung cancer screening comes into play.
Talking with Konstantinos Poulikidis, doctor at assistant professor as well at the Department of Surgery at Hackensack Meridian School of Medicine and thoracic surgeon at Hackensack Meridian Health Central Region. Let's talk about the screenings themselves for those who may be hesitant about getting a screening because they think there might be some danger there. Is there anything to worry about? I wouldn't think so.
So the screening CAT scan is actually a low-dose CAT scan of the chest. It comes with significantly less radiation than what a normal CAT scan would involve. So there really is minimal risk associated with the CAT scan.
Okay. And how have these the screenings changed over the past several years, 20, 30 years?
Oh, they've changed significantly. These new criteria that I just mentioned, the 50 to 80 years old, 20-pack years, quit smoking within 15 years or current smoker, that's actually been broadened. As of a few years ago, the age range was smaller. It involved only up to the age 77 and starting from around age 55. And even if you go further back than that, before there was low-dose CAT scans, they were getting x-rays, which was missing a large amount of these lesions.
So how often, let's say I'm a 20-pack, I'm a pack a day, 20 years, and I go and I get checked out and everything seems to be clear. When should I, and I've quit smoking, do I need to get a screening again in the future, or is that recommended?
So the screening CAT scan will be once per year. Okay. Until you no longer meet the criteria. So let's say you quit 10 years ago. Once you pass the 15-year mark that since you've quit, you no longer meet the criteria, you don't need the CAT scan anymore. If you're no longer in the age range, 50 to 80, you no longer need it. But typically, as long as you fit the criteria, that CAT scan is done every year.
No matter what age you are, if you fit the criteria, it's every year is when you should get a screening.
Correct.
Okay. And could you take us step by step through a screening? Let's say I go to my primary care physician, and he recommends I move forward to, you know, I get a screening, something. And so I come to you. Screening is done. Could you take me through the steps of what's happening during this screening? And am I awake? Am I asleep?
So typically, you know, you'll see your primary care, you'll get this CAT scan ordered, you'll follow up at a hospital or an outpatient center where they perform these CAT scans. The CAT scan itself takes laying down on the actual machine. It's like a donut. I don't want people to think it's like an MRI with the long tube because mm-hmm. a lot of people have claustrophobia. They don't want to be in that situation. But a CAT scanner is just basically like going through a donut. The scan itself takes probably about 5 minutes. It doesn't involve any contrast going through the veins. You probably spend most of the time just getting into the office, signing some paperwork. The actual test itself is pretty quick. The results of that, you know, your physician can look at it almost instantaneously. Usually it takes about a day or so for a radiologist to read it. Okay. And usually by the next doctor's visit, that can be reviewed. Now, let's say CAT scan is done and a small lesion is found. That your primary care will typically probably have you follow up with either a pulmonologist, a lung doctor, or a thoracic surgeon like myself.
Okay, so after the screening is done, you find out the results at the next visit?
That's when you would have a discussion. You would talk about it with your physician if there are any findings, correct?
If there are findings. So either way, whether there's something there or there's nothing there, you're still waiting for the next visit. You're scheduling another visit to talk about it. It's not like a phone call or an email letting you know what the situation is.
No, that usually, in my opinion, if there ever is a were to be a lesion in the lung, I think it would be best to have a conversation in person with patients because people panic. They get worried. They start Googling if they see something in the lung. And a lot of times, little lesions can pop up in the lung, and they could be benign. Majority of the time, they are not a cancer. So I feel that it's important to have a sit-down conversation with your physician to go over the CAT scan. I pull up the images myself. I show them to the patients, show them what this lesion looks like. I go over what I think it could be. If I'm worried that it's a cancer, we'll talk about what the next steps are. And if I'm not so worried, we'll just plan on following it again with another CAT scan. Maybe instead of a year, we may do it in 6 months.
Either way, it's at the next visit. The reason I'm asking is because people might think, are they going to get their screening, or you find out, all right, the visit is now scheduled, the next visit is scheduled. But if there's nothing there, if there's a phone call involved, hey, we got your results, everything's fine, then people are going to know if they don't get a phone call, they have an issue, and then they're going to worry even more.
Correct.
Right. That's why you do it that way.
So whenever we plan the CAT scan, we'll order the CAT scan when I see patients, and we'll already have a visit set up for after the CAT scan.
Right, okay.
So it's been pre-scheduled with them.
So people aren't doing too much thinking, like, wait a second. People are thinking, they're looking at your facial expression when you're looking at things. They're checking out everything because they obviously it's a legitimate worry.
Absolutely. That's why I really, you know, that's why I have that appointment already pre-scheduled so they know that if it's negative, I'm still going to go in and talk to them. It's a little bit of an inconvenience for the patient to have to come in, but if we have it pre-scheduled, we can have a legitimate conversation and talk about next steps.
Right. I think that's
I think it makes people a little more comfortable.
Absolutely. That is a great way of doing it. Are you seeing an increase in positive results in recent years?
Since lung cancer screening has started, there has been a significant increase in identification of early stage lung cancers. These are little 1 centimeter nodules that are present in the lung that normally give you no symptoms whatsoever, and probably wouldn't become a significant cancer until years down the line. So there has been a significant increase in identifying early stage cancers.
Which is great. I mean, obviously you would, I mean, if you're screening earlier, you would get earlier results, which is great. But as far as cases go, yeah, you can't say there's more cases because you're getting the same case, you're just getting it sooner.
Exactly. It's hard to compare to the past because the screening programs weren't in effect. They were getting x-rays, but there was a higher rate of later stage cancers in the past compared to today. But you also have to take into account increase in population. And so, you know, it's difficult to really compare.
Talking with Dr. Konstantinos Poulikidis. Doctor is an assistant professor in the Department of Surgery at Hackensack Meridian School of Medicine and thoracic surgeon at Hackensack Meridian Health Central Region. Can we get into the treatment? So once it is identified, what's the road look like after that?
So when we identify these small lesions, for example, we would next try to get a biopsy, like we kind of discussed earlier. That would involve the robotic bronchoscope that we have just started to use. They would come into the hospital, same day procedure. So we'd be able to put this camera down, identify the lesion, do our biopsies. Those results usually from the biopsy take about a week to get back. Patients go home the same day. If it does come back as a cancer, I have them come back to the office again. We talk about what the results are. If we need any more imaging testing, we'll get it done in the meantime. But I do want to talk about our surgery that we perform. For these early stage cancers, for the most part, they go straight to surgery. We do our surgery minimally invasive. We use the robotic instrument. So it's all small incisions, about four or five small incisions. I control the robot. We'll resect that portion of the lung. And typically patients will be discharged home between 1 and 2 days. So if we do surgery on Monday, I'll have a patient home by Tuesday or Wednesday. Of course, there are some patients that may need a couple extra days. But for the most part, me and my partner, we have a Society of Thoracic Surgery rating of 3 stars, which is one of the highest. It is the highest rating you can get. And that's all based on our outcomes and our ability to get patients discharged and back home. And I think that all plays a big part with the use of our robot instruments.
When you say when you get into surgery immediately, is that immediately? Like you find something, you bring them in. Okay, we're going in right now. Follow me. Or is that?
No. We'll do the biopsy. Mm-hmm. Usually, like I said, it takes about a week. So I'll see them in the office. We'll get any other preoperative planning. We'll check their lung function, any other imaging we may need. And usually we'll plan surgery within a couple weeks of identifying that this is a cancer.
And then afterwards, is there medication or are they just done? They walk out and they're all good.
If it's an early stage lung cancer, that's all they need. It's surgery. You come in on one day, you're home by 1 to 2 days later. You don't need any further treatment. Patients are mostly worried about the pain that they will have, and that's one of the big benefits of the robot instrument that we use. It really minimizes patients' pain. I've had some patients tell me they have zero pain at all. I have some patients that go home and they're just on some Tylenol. That doesn't mean that there aren't some patients that need some narcotic, but typically by 1 to 2 weeks after surgery, majority of my patients no longer need any pain medications, and by 1 month out from surgery, they're back to all their back to normal, back to work. I do tell patients you may have a little bit less energy initially after surgery, but by a month out, you're back to your normal energy level. And my patients are walking around the day of surgery. Right after surgery, I have them walking around. They're back to doing all their normal activities.
Okay, so same day, they're back to normal activities. They have some discomfort maybe, might need to take some medication for pain, maybe not. But by a month out, it's like it never happened.
That's the goal, yes.
Yeah, okay, great. Doctor, thank you so much for taking the time. Oh, one more question for those who are probably wondering. How is it involved with insurance? Is this always covered by insurance? Are there certain things types of lesions or cancers that may not be covered?
If there is a lung cancer, it is covered by insurance. I have not had a situation where a patient is identified to have a lung cancer and their insurance does not cover the appropriate treatment for that. And as long as you meet the criteria for lung cancer screening, you should also be covered for that as well.
Great. Great news. Dr. Konstantinos Poulikidis, the assistant professor in the Department of Surgery at Hackensack Meridian School of Medicine and thoracic surgeon at Hackensack Meridian Health Central Region. Doctor, thank you so much for taking the time today.
No, thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
There you have it. Hopefully you got something out of that conversation and you'll get a screening if it is recommended. For more information, go to jfkmc.org. If you want a podcast of this show, go to foxsportsradionewjersey.com. JFK Spotlight on Health is brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health. Keep getting better. I'm Joel Katz. We'll talk to you next week.